So this evening we have the privilege to be addressed by George Gilder, who is with us in his capacity as a scholar, of course, and as a very distinguished author on all manner of subjects related to wealth, to poverty, to the knowledge economy, to the digital age, to business history, social analysis, and to making predictions that make sense about the important trends in society that impact political economy and ultimately the prosperity of our republic. George is a contributing editor at Forbes and a frequent writer for major business publications. He publishes the Gilder Technology Report and produces the annual Gilder Forbes conference publications, both of which offer elite analysis of ascending and disruptive technologies. And as an historian, I can't possibly tell you what that means, but he will. And he is the chairman of the Gilder Group. I'd like to ask you to hold your applause for a moment and ask George to come up to the stage, because we actually have an honor to bestow on him before he begins his remarks. Thank you. George, you didn't know about this, but at the trustee meeting today, George was elected a distinguished member of the society.
All right. And
George,
took me 35 years.
Well, just remember, it's not longevity alone that gets you one of these. Yeah. But
Ed Fulner must have one by now. Two or three, how many do you...
we don't do multiple ones. Now, come on. Only people like Bernie Sanders do things like that. So I'm going to move out of your way, George. Thank you for being here, but congratulations on your distinguished membership election.
Well, thank you. I love the Philadelphia Society because it upholds the significance of ideas, which is a hard road in contemporary society, which is mainly devoted to what might be called a flat universe of belief, a belief in a flat universe where everything is reduced to molecules and atoms. And recently I've been writing about wealth as knowledge, and a professor at MIT, of all places, recently wrote a book called Why Information Grows, which begins with this wonderful analogy that when an expensive car crashes against a wall, all its information and value disappears, even though every atom and molecule remains. Value is information. The car is knowledge. And this is, it's a top-down hierarchical universe. It doesn't bubble up from atoms and molecules to human minds. It doesn't work that way. The hierarchy works the other way. It's a top-down universe. And the flat universe superstition, which rules and ruins the universities of America. We still have Universidad Francisco Marroquin and in Guatemala upholding the power of ideas, and Hillsdale, which is, you know, I always say that I went to Harvard, but my heart is in Hillsdale, and look unto the hills. This whole reductionist superstition, the materialist superstition that corrupts learning everywhere, and would, if it triumphs, make impossible any future of technology or economic growth. It's a terrible trahison d'éclair, which reached its climax at Harvard recently where Drew Faust announced she was raising another $400 million to make climate change central to all her departments. I mean, this is depraved. Our university system is all sicklied o'er by a pale cast of green goo. And it makes any kind of coherent thinking virtually impossible. Well, tonight, I'm sort of celebrating the launch of The Scandal of Money, my new book, which is out there in huge piles, beckoning you with longing, soulful eyes. But this is really the launch of it. It came out on March 28th, and I think it's April 1st or something today. Is that right? April 1st, yeah. Well, and it maintains that the world depends on a system, on an intellectual system of the world. And the one which has prevailed for some 300 years is really the system that was established by Isaac Newton. And this was a system of one God, one universe, and one money. And Newton didn't have any use for multiple parallel universes, which is the greatest intellectual scandal in the history of science. But it's little understood that Newton not only established the scientific culture, but also established the culture of money. And that money is really a foundation of all economic progress and human commerce. And Newton in 1796 was named Master of the Mint. And because all the biographers of Newton were physicists or philosophers of science, they all declare that the final 30 years of his life represented a terrible decline into frivolity in a sinecure at the Mint. But what Newton did at the Mint was invent and establish and install the gold standard. That's what Newton accomplished at the Mint. When he assumed office, there was a chaos of currencies. Silver, electrum, a mixture of silver and gold, all sorts of coins that were chipped and depreciated, and all sorts of competition for counterfeiting. And Newton resolved on gold and resolved to exterminate all these other rivals to it. And by the time he left office, gold was completely established as the foundation for the pound at, I think, £3.89167 to ounce of gold. And the British Empire was at its pinnacle. Britain had repulsed the challenge of the brilliant commercial leaders of the Netherlands. Newton had really established a system of the world which extended to money. And it was not frivolity. This was his climax of his career. It was probably more important. Leibniz had really done the calculus too, although Newton was too vain to ever acknowledge it. And Newton's great vision in physics was a great triumph, but I think his establishment of the gold standard might have been more important, possibly. Any case, that was the system of the world that made the West triumph, made all these great technological breakthroughs that Robert Gordon celebrates in his giant tome on technology and his alibi for the failure of the left, that this technological miracle could only happen once, and now we were embroiled in secular stagnation, which is really intellectual stagnation in the American university. So that was the system of the world. It was based on gold and a hierarchy of truth. One God, one universe, one money. A new system of the world emerged amazingly. I believe the key moment was in 1931, and the key figure was Kurt Gödel, who was then, I think, 22 or 3, a young guy, and with one of his first major papers, and he was presenting it at a kind of side conference at Königsberg, where Hilbert had assembled all the great scientists and mathematicians of Europe to celebrate his agenda, which really was the flat universe theory. The materialist superstition was going to be established by demonstrating the complete coherence of math, could explain the entire universe, and the entire universe could be maintained as a kind of expression of determinist mathematics. And Hilbert's great ally and apostle in this cause was John von Neumann, and he actually organized a lot of this Königsberg conference, and he had reduced, he did a kind of mathematical principia of quantum theory and expressing quantum theory in a coherent mathematical scheme. And so he was a key figure and really the most brilliant person there. And meanwhile, Gödel wasn't even speaking at the main conference, but von Neumann did choose to sit in on this side conference where some graduate students, as they might be called, were making presentations. And Gödel delivered, who wasn't a very impressive guy, and he wasn't extremely well-spoken, and he delivered this paper kind of quietly, and von Neumann, within minutes, it seems, recognized that the entire Hilbert project had collapsed in this paper by Gödel, which showed essentially that, and I think it was the most important moment of 20th century intellect philosophy. What Gödel proved was that any logical system whatsoever, from mathematics to money or whatever, to physics, is necessarily dependent on axioms outside the system that can't be reduced to the system. And this includes mathematics itself. And so, he did this by really inventing the computer or inventing computer software. This is the other second big recognition that von Neumann made in Königsberg in 1931. And he decided to become a computer scientist and information theorist rather than a titan of the materialist superstition and the flat universe vision. And I just think it's just such a wonderful moment for this great man, everybody bowing to him as the greatest mathematical mind of the century, a follower of the previous great mind, Hilbert, giving up his fundamental system of the world in minutes after hearing an abstruse and difficult paper delivered by a young student. This is a great moment in 20th century history from my point of view. And it launched information theory, and which is really the theory that underlies the information economy, the internet, the computer, the data mining, all the Google, the basic foundations of the modern economy all stem from this information theory that sprang from Gödel's paper as reinterpreted by von Neumann, who provided the architecture for the von Neumann architecture for all the computers that were built. And information theory was later perfected mathematically by Alan Turing and then by Claude Shannon at MIT. And they really established the foundations, I think, for an economics that actually functions to express the top-down universe, the system of the world that can actually generate new growth and progress in the future. And Shannon essentially said that information is surprise. It's unexpected bits. And it depends on the freedom of the source of the information. And thus it's an affirmation of liberty. And Albert Hirschman of Princeton really got me going on this subject when he wrote that creativity always comes as a surprise to us. If it didn't, we wouldn't need it. And planning would work. And all these economics, determinist economics, fail because of this incapacity to address human creativity, which is really the source of all wealth and progress. And Shannon, by identifying information in a most fundamental way as surprisal, as unexpected bits. If everything I tell you tonight you already know, it's a zero entropy communication. This is why politicians are so boring. They go out and do market surveys and polls to find out just what their audience thinks already, and then they say whatever it is they find, and are amazed that the public is bored, that the audience is bored. So here we have a new system of the world based on information and creativity. And that is, and knowledge is wealth, growth as learning. If wealth is knowledge, growth has to be learning. And that's what economic growth is learning. And learning depends on freedom. You really, if there's some government prescribing what you're going to learn, it almost prohibits any learning process that has to observe Popperian falsifiability, as Popper showed. If you don't, if you don't specify how to refute whatever scientific theory you're proposing, it's not a scientific theory if it's not falsifiable. And what makes capitalism work is all its businesses are falsifiable. Bankruptcy is possible, and that's what makes capitalism succeed. It can be a learning process. and learning is growth, and learning curves are the most fundamental phenomenon. Okay, well, here we are, in 2016, trying to reverse all the advances of freedom over the previous centuries. And I think that it's a difficult moment for some conservatives even, because what's really happened in money is the ultimate triumph of Milton Friedman's monetary theory, you know, which is quoted more by Paul Krugman than anyone else. And Friedman debated Hayek on this, and Friedman won, but Hayek declared that the government monopoly and control of money is the source and root of all monetary evil. And we now have, and the scandal of money shows that's true. And I'll close with just one little item from the scandal of money. And that is my discovery, which is not, many people must have discovered it before, but I don't think they quite responded the way I did. But the discovery that what replaced gold, you know, when Nixon went off gold, what replaced gold was floating currencies. And everyone, all the leading economists, including Friedman, predicted that after Nixon left gold, the price of gold would drop and gold would become insignificant and be forgotten pretty much as a monetary element. And instead, gold went up 28-fold, and the economy went into chaos during the 1970s, as you might recall, the Malaz decade, the decade of stagflation, the energy crisis. It was the 70s were a chaos of currencies caused by the divorce of money for many standard of value. And today, currency trading, which the alternative to gold, which Krugman thinks gold caused the Great Depression, and there are all sorts of no economist believes in gold except Robert Mundell, and he had a stroke last week. I hope he's okay. But Mundell, I celebrate in the scandal of money. And currency trading is now $5.4 trillion every 24 hours. That was 3 years ago. In a couple weeks, the Bureau of International Settlements will release new numbers. But that's $600 billion a second, so it's adequate. It is 73 times all the trade in goods and services in the world. It's 26 times all GDP in the world. It's hundreds of times stock market trading. And it doesn't even yield a value of currency as a measuring stick more stable than the economic activity it's supposed to measure. In other words, it's a total failure in providing a stable value of money, which was its purpose. So this is a scandal of money, that 10 banks do 77% of all this currency trading. 98% of it, 97% of it is speculation. It's not, and the economies that have done best are the economies that have shielded themselves from it. China adopted Mundell and spurned Friedman, and China's leading finance university is named after Robert Mundell, and 30 universities in China have Mundell as an honorary professor, and he He's really prevailing in China, and China's importing gold like mad. And they're also now have only, they're only 17% of their GDP is government spending compared to close to 30% here. So there are a lot of things going on in the world that are, that offer an opportunity for a new standard of money based, I think, on the internet first, with Bitcoin as a transactions layer for the internet, and the convergence of Gödel and Newton, and in a new future for America and the world. Thank you.